Welcome to the Thriving Birth Worker Podcast, a space for conversations about how you, the birth worker, can create not only a fulfilling and sustainable career, but a joyful and thriving life. I'm Erin Underwood, an educator, movement specialist, mother of four boys, and a total anatomy nerd. My passion is to see birth workers encouraged, supported, and empowered in their careers and life.
Hello, friends. Today, I am super excited because I get to talk to you about one of the things I love most in the whole world, and that is movement for stress reduction. That's right. Most of the time, when we talk about exercise, most people associate exercise with a feelings of guilt or shame. They think about this list of things that they should do, something that's on their list that they're not doing, or they feel like they should be doing, and something they're not doing enough of or any of, and that doesn't fit into their lives. And because of that, people a lot of times feel like they're failing in this area. And I love flipping that whole narrative on its head. So before I rush into this amazing topic, I wanted to catch you up on one of my next projects. The Thriving Birth Worker YouTube channel is almost live. Just a few more weeks. I'm super excited. I've heard some really awesome ideas from several of you, but I wanted to throw this out there one more time. If you haven't heard, I am creating a YouTube channel for birth workers, creating tutorials and exercises for movements that you need to serve your clients. So think about along the lines of like wrist stretches after a long session of applying counter pressure or wrist strengthening exercises to prepare your wrists and upper arms for applying counter pressure for long periods of time. How to navigate around a birth tub without feeling like you're going to fall in, or how to move and stretch your body during a birth in subtle ways, and so much more. I'm creating this channel for you, so I'm asking if you have any specific ideas or requests that you send me a quick email at erinunderwoodmovement@gmail.com. I have loved all the emails and ideas I've gotten so far, and I'm so grateful to connect with you and to learn from this powerful community. So if you have any ideas, please don't be shy. Email me. I'd love to have a conversation. So let's dive into our topic for the day, movement. Now, I love words, and I love making sure that we're all on the same page when we use these words. So I'll be defining a few of these words in our conversation today. So oftentimes when we think about movement, we immediately jump to the word exercise. And when we think of exercise, we think of a separate activity in special clothes, in a special place. So it's an extra thing that we're doing outside of anything else in our everyday lives. So when I choose to use the word movement over exercise, I'm doing that with a lot of intention. I see movement as bigger than exercise, more than a separate activity that we are told that we need every day to be healthy. So I'm not anti-exercise at all. I teach exercise classes. I teach exercises. But when I use the word movement, again, like I said, I'm doing it with a lot of intention because I want to zoom out a little bit and look at things from a wider perspective and then zoom in when we talk about exercise. So when we zoom out, I have this really awesome example when we talk about movement and when we talk about how it should look. And I like to reference the Hadza tribe in Tanzania. So they are a hunter-gatherer tribe that scientists have studied quite a bit because they're one of the last people groups that are really untouched by modern living. So they live in the same way that they lived for thousands of years, how they eat, how they migrate, how they live off the land, their community interactions, all of it has really remained untouched, which really doesn't exist very much in the world at all anymore. So the Hadza tribe have really incredible health. So everything from cardiovascular disease to cancer, like they have very strong bodies and are statistically super low in the unhealthy issues that can surface. So when you think about cardio specifically, so I'm going to be talking about their movement practices and how that relates to exercise because this people group isn't jumping on a treadmill. They're not, you know, lifting weights in a gym. They are living their lives and whatever they're doing in their natural living, just everyday lives, it is working really, really well for them. And scientists have flagged this as something that's really interesting. And so I wanted to dissect this for just a second because it's really good, I think, to look outside of our own culture and our own normal ways of looking at life that we think is normal. But when we travel or when we read historical books or we interact with someone from another culture, we realize that our normal sometimes, and a lot of times actually, is drastically influenced through our culture, through our perspective, through just what we've been surrounded with. And so it's not that culture is bad, but I think it's very good to identify that the things that we label as normal a lot of times are cultural. And again, that's a language, a linguistic, a definition that I like to just present. So this Hazda tribe, they are living their lives hunter-gatherer style. And so scientists have been like, what do they do for cardio? Like, what is their exercise? Again, it's not exercise, but it's movement. What does their daily movement regimen look like to get these health benefits? And so cardio or heart impact, like how much stress we're applying onto the heart, can be broken down into like high, medium, and low intensity rates. So if you think of high being like running as fast as you can for a minute and your heart rate's going to be at like about 85% like capacity, medium would be like between 50 and 75%, and then light activity would be like taking a walk. So can you, if you think about like how much would you guess their high intensity workout is every day? Like if you're going to have a pristine, amazing cardiovascular health, like how much high intensity cardio do you think you need a day? And the answer a lot of times surprises some of us, and it's only between 15 and 20 minutes a day for the high intensity cardio. And it's not all in one bout at all. That's just spread throughout the day. And again, the medium range would be between 30 and 40 minutes a day. And so the light activity that they do every day is most of what they do. And that's between 200 and 300 minutes every day. So I love this example because we are in a culture that believes that if something isn't big and impressive and Instagram worthy, that it doesn't really count. That those 200, 300 minutes of light activity, they couldn't really count, could they? Yes, they do. They actually make the biggest impact, I think. And it doesn't mean we throw out high intensity, but it doesn't mean that we need to be in the gym 3 hours a day doing high intensity for that full amount of time to get an amazing, healthy body. Now, I'm not saying the gym is bad or the treadmill is bad or any of that. I used to be a gym goer. If you go to the gym, like high five, good for you. But if that isn't necessarily your jam, again, we live in a culture that it's either or, it's all or nothing. And so if you're not someone who goes to the gym on a regular basis, like you're gonna really struggle to have a healthy body. And, you know, I just want to poke some holes in that mentality just for fun. So I like to think about, and if you are a gym goer, again, awesome, good for you. But I want to encourage you to keep listening because movement is just like food. So the gym provides some really awesome nutrients, but it's not a complete diet either when we think of a holistic movement protocol. So when it comes to that example of the Hazda tribe, you know, these people are living off of the land, they're hunter-gatherers, they're moving, they're digging tubers, they're walking anywhere between 5 and 10 miles a day. And while obviously that's not necessarily going to translate into our daily living because we don't live off of the land, we're not hunter-gatherers, I just like to use that example because it doesn't mean, I think sometimes our mind will go to really extreme situations and think like, I have to be in the gym an hour every day to be healthy. I do not have time to be in the gym an hour a day. Therefore, nothing I do counts. And so I might as well not try. And so I love that example because really that really low intensity movement throughout the day being spread out is a huge part of the equation that provides this people group with amazing, healthy physical bodies. And so small shifts matter, which we're going to get into in a minute. So I'd like to first start with when we're talking about movement and stress and trauma and what is movement, what is health, what is all these things, exercise, all of that. I want to address our mindset. So culturally, because mindset matters, mindset is the foundation for almost anything. How we think and view the world drastically impacts our experience of it. And so when we look at our culture, we realize we have been wired by a sedentary culture. Almost all of us live in a sedentary culture where there's lots of chairs and there's not a lot of movement. We need exercise and we need to sometimes slow down and realize what is normal and what is cultural. And can we shift our perspective a little bit to open up maybe a new way of looking at the world? So the first one that I want to address, the first mindset, is this all or nothing mindset, which my hand is raised over here. I am a type A person. I am very all or nothing when it comes normal or natural to just the way I automatically think. It is very all or nothing. And I can be a little dramatic on the all or nothing piece. And so I just remember thinking that if it wasn't big, if anything I did around exercise wasn't like giving my all, then what was the point? It didn't really matter. And so if I wasn't sweating like crazy and if my heart wasn't going like crazy, then I just felt like, you know, why do anything? Because it's just, you know, I'm half-assing it. And that really kind of set me up for not taking advantage of smaller opportunities that basically the low intensity heart rate component of that equation. I basically shoved that to the side and was like, low intensity doesn't really matter. It's at least medium, if not high intensity, is what counts. And if it's not, I'm not going to be doing that, then why do anything? And that idea that certain things don't count, it can be really dangerous. So when we think about, like, a lot of us will take vitamins because we've realized, like, our diet, no matter how healthy we try and be and how well-rounded of a diet of your fruits and your veggies and your grains or whatever it is that you have settled on that feels really good in your body, then we still realize, like, even if we're eating all day, like, really healthy food, but we're also trying to, you know, not eat all day necessarily, like, eat the right amount that your body needs to burn, we realize that there's going to be some missing components. So a lot of us take these little vitamins, multivitamins, to round out what our diet kind of slips, what slips through the cracks. And I like thinking about movement very similarly to diet, because while food nourishes us, you know, it gives us the elements that we need to live our lives, movement is very, very similar in how it provides us with a lot of function and strength so that we can live our lives. And so a lot of these low intensities, these smaller pieces, actually are like our multivitamin, and they're really impactful and they're really powerful. And so a mindset shift for myself, especially, is to celebrate and enjoy the small things and realize I'm nourishing my body with these small things, that it's not just me like settling. I'm not settling and I'm not selling myself short by doing these small things, that really acknowledging that these small, lower intensity activities are a massive piece of the equation and they're very nourishing for my body. And so that mindset shift was really powerful. So the other mindset shift that I've made personally is this avoidance mindset. And I'm going to give you an example. I don't remember where it started. It's probably a cultural thing too. But I just remember when I was pregnant, and oh my gosh, I mean, if you're pregnant, if you've ever been pregnant, especially like the 8, 9 months pregnant stage, and you're like in the kitchen or you're doing something and something drops on the ground and you're just like, no, like I have to get down on the ground and pick this up. I just remember that sigh and that internal like, no feeling, like when something fell on the ground. And I feel like that just continued in my life when any situation presented itself where it required a little bit more than the very minimum amount of movement to get done, I felt really inconvenienced and I felt annoyed and I felt like, oh, is there a way I can get around this? And it was, I've called this the avoidance mindset of really wanting to avoid any excess movement. And so when I started celebrating that small things matter, that I can really celebrate that these really small things that I'm doing in my life actually are nourishing me, then when something fell on the ground, I would just kind of smile, be like, oh, look, like I get an extra squat in. Cool. And rather than catching that mentality and questioning it. So a few episodes back, I did an episode on a practice that you can do to thrive. And I really dug into Byron Katie's four questions that she asks herself that I've put into practice in my own life. That's been really powerful. And so when I was, and if you want to listen to that episode, you can just jump on back. But this, how I processed through my avoidance, like rewiring my brain around that, it was one of those questions I was able to ask myself, like, it felt like a massive inconvenience. And then I got to ask myself, like, is it true? Like, is this really an inconvenience? Like, is it really, you know, these strong emotions that come up, these strong negative emotions? Like, it was kind of silly when I would slow down and ask myself, like, I have a very capable physical body. Like it felt so inconvenient to me in that moment. I was like, I have to question this in my own mind because this seems almost dangerous. Like how strong of a reaction I would get to a little bit extra movement being required of me. And so I was able to, through this process and through some time, rewire my brain around this avoidance mentality. And now, like, I feel like most of the time, I mean, I get hormonal and I get moody and I get tired, but most of the time when a situation is presented to me where I need to exert a little extra movement, I'm okay. Like yesterday, this is a perfect example. My husband, we were at the Costco. So it's a really big, like, warehouse shopping store. And where you get all of our groceries, we have four boys. So we get like the big packs of all the food because like to feed this tribe. And so it was crazy. It was busy. And so my husband dropped us off and then he went and parked the car. And so as we were leaving, he gets this look on his face. He's like, babe, I was on the phone when I was coming into the store. And honestly, I don't remember where I parked the car. And so we split up and I have a couple of kids and he has a couple of kids and we're just wandering around this giant parking lot that is packed full of cars and people looking for our car because he's like, I don't remember at all where it is. And we walked around that whole parking lot a couple of times and I could feel myself initially starting to be a little annoyed at him. Like, come on, dude, like, let's get real. Like, you don't remember at all. And yet then I was like, oh, I just get a smile and I get to enjoy a little walk with one of my little guys and, you know, get some vision, like get some relaxation into my eyeballs by looking around and looking at my environment. And it probably took us like 10 minutes to find the car, like separate looking for it. And so I was able to really, rather than feel inconvenienced, see it as an opportunity for this movement isn't bad. Like the goal isn't to move the least amount. And culturally and physiologically, if you look at historically, we are wired to go the route that has the least resistance. So it doesn't mean anything and internally is actually wrong with us. Like it's neurologically how we're wired is to go the route of least resistance. But when we live in a sedentary culture, there are times where it is very appropriate to override that impulse, but knowing and choosing to override that impulse, like this is where I want to break the shame and the guilt off. Just because we have that impulse doesn't mean anything is wrong with you or me, because that's actually very, very, very normal. And so I think some of us are almost waiting for like that impulse. We feel like either something's wrong internally because I'm wired to use the route of least resistance, or we just want that to magically disappear so that we feel like moving. And then when that happens, then I'll start moving. And really, it's an active process of choosing to process those impulses and then make intentional choices around them. And so that was me emotionally making an intentional choice. I mean, we had to find the car. Like, we couldn't just not find it. But making that intentional choice and feeling that it wasn't as hard as it used to be was really encouraging. So you can neurologically rewire your brain and how you think about things, but it takes some effort. So yeah, that path of least resistance is something to process and think about. So the other mindset shift is that movement is empowerment. So you get to use your body to take care of yourself. And on any level that you do that, it can be very and is very empowering. It's just a mindset shift. So whether you have to crawl on your hands and knees to find your keys under the couch, to wander around a parking lot trying to find your car, to squatting down to pick something up, to just giving your eyes a break and looking out the window. Like, all of us have different levels of ability, but whatever your level of ability is, when you move to take care of yourself, it's actually very empowering. And so enjoying that process of like, I can take care of myself, like whatever, you don't have to call another human being or a machine into your life to do a job for you, then you're doing that for yourself. Even just breathing, like, it's powerful and it's amazing. And it's like so much of your system is working together to support you. And so when we make those shifts of rather it being an inconvenience or rather than it being something we're incapable of, to celebrate the pieces that we are more than capable of and to play around in that area and around our boundaries can be really empowering. So another mindset shift would be small movements matter. So I've talked about this a little bit, but I want to dive a little bit deeper into it. Movement has a wildly huge range. Everything from micro, tiny cellular movements to these massive, like moving your entire body. We have a huge range of movements that could be available to us. And so we have, because we live in a sedentary culture, I think we have glamorized these massive movements because they feel more effective. It feels like you're moving your whole body and you're getting the most bang for your buck. You're getting the most out of your time and your effort. And so it feels more valid to set aside special time to do the big things and the little things. But when we can incorporate a lot of little movements into our everyday lives, into what you're already doing, you can see massive results, just like taking like a little multivitamin every so often. And so everything from moving your eyes, like when you look at distances that are far away, your eye muscles get the opportunity to relax. So if you think of your bicep muscle, if like a bicep curl, so if you, your arm is hanging down straight, and you are holding a weight in your arm and you curl up and you're in that bicep curl, you go up as high as you can. And then you just work in like a little 15 degree range where your arm is not able to relax all the way down. You're just staying less than a 90 degree angle. Like, you're really working in a really small range. That's basically what's happening to our eyeballs when we are indoors. Like, we are, your eye muscles are constricted. They're active and they don't get to relax unless we're looking far away. And so looking, if you can find a window and look at the thing that's farthest away from you for a good 30 seconds, then your eye muscles actually get a chance to relax. It's like letting your arm hang down. It's just relaxing. So there's a really simple way that, again, those tiny little muscles, but think about everything in the face and everything in the jaw. Like, when we have excess tension, I mean, how impacted is your life, is your day when you have a headache? Like, it impacts everything. And so, and when we can, from a movement perspective, allow those muscles to relax the jaw, look out the window, take a few deep breaths, relax the eyes. And if that can help relieve or alleviate or prevent a headache, then it does make a massive impact on your life. You can adjust where you carry your neck and your head. Again, headaches, neck tension, it's a big deal. And so again, shifting our mindset from not just sit-ups and push-ups and running and heavy lifting is what matters, but really celebrating when we do these small little things and not labeling them as small, but just as one piece of the puzzle that is just as vital as the other pieces. So I want to talk about this really cool word that I love, that is one of my favorite things in the world to talk about. It's proprioception. So proprioception is your body's awareness of where it's at in space. So if you put your hand behind you, reach it behind you where you can't see it, and you wiggle your fingers, you're pretty aware of where they're at in space. If you reach your right hand over your head, but a little bit back behind where your peripheral vision is, and then you take your left hand, and I want you to just grab a hold of your right hand. So it's usually relatively simple for our left hand to find our right hand, even when we're not looking at it. Or you can just do this even with your eyes closed, and it doesn't have to be overhead. It can just be like, close your eyes, reach your right hand out somewhere in front of you, take your left hand and find your right hand with your eyes closed. That's proprioception. That's your awareness of where your body's at in space. Our hands, we're very neurologically wired and connected to those areas of our body because we use our hands a lot. And so we have a pretty strong awareness of where our hands are at in space and what they're doing. So we have areas of our body that we're a little less connected to neurologically. Now, it doesn't mean that that's necessarily bad. Like we can't, the areas we use more, we're connected to more. But think about your toes. Like if you don't move your toes, creating that brain map of where your toes are in space is a little more challenging. You know where they're at, but sometimes it helps. Like if we wiggle our toes, we add a little bit of movement to feel a little stronger what's going on with our feet. And there's other areas of the body that, you know, like your hips or all these things where the less we communicate with those areas of the body, the less our brain map is maybe accurate or even turned on. So when we define proprioception and then we dig into this idea that we have areas of our body that we're more aware of, that we're less aware of, that we're working to create awareness of in those areas of the body. And I really like proprioception because it is creating a very present and intentional relationship with your own body. And we can use movement and like certain parameters to help us really develop a more intentional relationship with our body. And the cool thing is, there's been studies that have been shown that the more you work on these, basically building proprioceptional awareness of your body, it is shown to reduce stress and anxiety. So when we have this relationship with our body where we are choosing to be present with our body and not just the way I sit is normal. Like if you sit in the car after a half hour, if you have like a long commute, like if you were to freeze, you would think like I'm just sitting normal. But when you slow down, sometimes like for me, I have this thing where I lean to the right. And so if I slow down, like my body is in a really kind of weird shifted position where like my rib cage is shifted to the right and a little bit twisted. And then like my right leg is doing something a little bit wonky. Like I have this, it feels normal. It feels settled. It feels neutral. But when I slow down and I actually tune into where is my body at in space, I'll realize like, oh, I have this really interesting pattern and this really interesting habit that I shift into. And then I just stay there. And it doesn't mean that that position is wrong or bad or going to break me. But when my brain says you're sitting in neutral and then I slow down and I'm actually not in neutral at all, I'm in a really weird, twisted, kind of wonky position, then I get to develop a clear brain map between my brain and my body and realize, okay, I'm in actually a very twisted, interesting position. And when I get out of the car and then my back is all crinky and cranky at me, I can make different choices for the next car ride and realize that just because my brain tells me I'm in neutral without thinking about it, when I slow down and I think about it, I can actually make some different choices. So proprioception is really powerful work. One, because you're developing a relationship with your body. And the really cool thing is when you develop that relationship with your body, it lowers stress and anxiety. And I believe stress and anxiety a lot of times are connected to thinking about the past or thinking about the future. So think about what, so, you know, the past is can be regret. But also, like if that happened back then, maybe it'll happen in the future. And when we are not in the present moment, Like in this moment, a lot of times we don't have a ton to be stressed out or anxious about. It's usually what's going on in a relationship, what's going on in that conversation, how am I going to address this situation, how am I going to pay that bill, like whatever it is that's coming up in our hearts, in our minds. Most of the time, it's not about this present moment. It's about something that's either going to happen or has already happened. And so proprioception, what it does is it brings us into our body, into this moment right now. And it is a powerful practice. So it's not about nitpicking. It's not about, you know, figure out how to do it perfectly. It's just about slowing down and noticing what's going on in my body right now, right here. And then as we do that, as we develop that practice, it lowers our stress and anxiety, and it's just really powerful. So I love that element of it. In next week's episode, this is just part one because time, and it's really powerful step work, but I don't want to overwhelm you in 1 2-hour episode. So next week, I'm going to be really digging into trauma being held into the body. So we have these psoas, the fight or flight muscle. We can carry trauma in our jaws, our hips, our belly, our pelvic floor, really anywhere. And I've done a lot of studying in this area, so I want to dive deeper into that. But it's just something I wanted to mention is this episode is that movement is more than just physical. So I believe that we are body, soul, and spirit. Like I believe in the spirit world, and I believe that we are more than just simply physical beings. Science has shown that we create an electromagnetic field that influences our environment, that other people have an electromagnetic field that influences our hearts and influences our physical heart. It influences our emotional heart, and we can carry emotional trauma in our physical bodies, or our physical pain can cause deep emotional trauma or profoundly impact the way we see and experience the world. So we live in a culture that likes to put everything in its separate boxes and tries to not to let any of it touch each other. And as hard as we try, when it comes to the human body, it doesn't work that way. So understanding that your back pain may not be simply from needing to adjust your pelvis, but some trauma or emotional pain or fears. But then on the flip side, also knowing that a psoas release and like an exercise can really impact your emotional healing and journey. And that movement can facilitate deep healing and create empowerment and powerful perspective shifts. This is one of the biggest reasons why I personally teach movement. I believe we are enabled. We need to be enabled to have an abundant life, and not just simply physically, but emotionally and spiritually. And the tool that I'm able to provide to facilitate this freedom is movement. And it has been so impactful in my own life, and I know in the lives of so many of my clients and others. So movement is also self-care, shifting from a should mentality to learning what your body loves and feeding it just that, feeding it what it loves. So I like to say, like, imagine yourself after a really good meal. Like, you're not bloated, but the food was delicious and you felt content and nourished and loved and cared for. There was community, there was culture, it was all at the table. And so now I want you to imagine that you could have that same relationship with yourself through movement, not just food. And when we flip exercise on its head and we say, rather than something that's on my to-do list, something that I have to feel stressed out about, that I have to squeeze into my day, what if I was able to develop a relationship with my body where I knew what its needs were so that at the end of the day, I could actually feel good? And because I felt so good, it rewired my brain around it so that I actually enjoyed it. And I was able to incorporate it into my everyday life, and it wasn't this stressful, exhausting experience. And if I was able to check it off the list, I just felt less bad about myself, but more, I feel just really good in my body. And everyone's needs are different. That's why I can't just say, I'm going to give you this exact protocol, this exact exercise class, this exact whatever, so that you are able to feel amazing in your body. Because just like I said earlier, like, we are more than just physical beings. And so there are times where I don't need a lot of intense, large movements. I just need a really long walk by myself. Like I can't even have the stimuli of headphones in my ears. And there are other days where I just love listening to podcasts and running around the neighborhood and throwing my kettlebell around and getting really big movements in. And that's me developing a relationship with my body, my emotional, my physical, my mental body, knowing what its needs are and meeting it. And I can still feel good at the end of the day doing very drastically different movement practices. But because I've gotten to know my body, and even especially with female anatomy, learning to honor our menstrual cycles, our monthly cycles, and meeting our needs there. Because when I'm on my period, it's very different than when I'm, you know, 2 weeks into my cycle. Like they're just very different emotional and physical states. And so when I can honor that, there's so much freedom there. And so this is what I love to flip on its head, that exercise and movement can provide freedom rather than guilt. So really practical steps. Let's get practical. I love to make sure we land in a place where we have really just practical elements. So one, walking matters. So I will be honest with you. When I first thought of walking as an exercise, I thought of my grandma. I felt like it was something that only old people did because they couldn't do anything else. So that is, again, tied to my all or nothing mentality. I am so guilty of being so judgmental towards walking. Walking, I'm sorry, I judged you. But this is where walking is actually one of the most powerful exercises that we can do. It works so much of our body. And walking and running are two different, they're very different loads on the body. So running is not just fast walking. So even if you're a runner, walking provides very different nutrients for your body and it works very different areas of it. So walking is really powerful. So small shifts matter. So everything from shifting to your pelvis position when you sit to changing your shoes so that your feet can get a little more movement throughout the day to, you know, giving your eyes a break when you look out the window, all of those things matter. And so, again, I don't want to give you one or two things that everyone has to do, and it's the way that everybody needs to move to feel better. But I'm more give you ideas, and then just through this idea of creating a relationship with your body, you're going to start noticing, just playing around and trying different things, and you're going to notice what really helps you feel better at the end of the day, and other things might not serve you all that well. It might create some stress or anxiety. So none of this movement practice needs to be a really stressful situation. It just needs to help facilitate freedom and, yeah, maybe a little bit of discomfort just because we're changing our mindset around certain things, but not extreme pain or anxiety. So practicing checking in with your body throughout the day. How does it feel? Where does it feel good? What feels cranky? Noticing is being present. And it's the first step to communicating with and having a relationship with your body, which, like I said earlier, reduces that overall stress and anxiety, which who doesn't want a little bit more of peace and presentness? I just made that word up in our bodies. Another really practical thing that you can practice is relaxing the belly, the jaw, the pelvic floor, anywhere you hold your tension. So when we want to develop strength and function in a muscle, we not only want to be able to engage, but we also want to be able to relax the muscle. So that creates very functional strength. So again, referencing back to proprioception, a lot of times our normal state feels neutral. It feels unengaged. But when we slow down and we check in, it might be like, oh, my normal state is to suck in and to clench my belly a lot or to clench my jaw. I'm a jaw clencher. And so for me, I don't feel like I'm clenching my jaw when I'm clenching my jaw because it's my normal. But when I slow down and I develop a proprioceptive habit of checking in and saying, what's going on with my jaw? All of a sudden I'm like, ooh, I am clenching my jaw big time. And I don't even know how long I've been doing that for. And so then I can choose to relax it, give a little, you know, do a few stretches, give a little massage with my fingertips. And I'm able to, through time, start actually feeling that that I'm clenching my jaw rather than just not even being aware of it. So that's a really powerful habit of noticing, slowing down and noticing where you carry your tension. And again, tension isn't bad, but creating that awareness of knowing when to recruit it and when we don't necessarily need to recruit it is very, very powerful. So another really practical step would be where we carry our head in relationship to how we position our neck. So one exercise I love to give my clients just so that they can feel a nice long stretch in the back of their neck is to take either an orange or a tennis ball and place it under your chin and then pin it against where the top of your, you know, the center of your clavicle is. So at the base of the neck and stand against a wall where if you wore a bra, you would have your bra strap placed, you know, pressed against the wall. And then keeping that ball or that orange in its place, how far back can you bring the back of your head to the wall? So it's okay if you can't make it all the way. If you can, great. We're both, you know, just exploring. But a lot of times we hinge at the top vertebrae of our neck rather than actually elongating the actual vertebrae all the way up the back of the neck. So that can be a really nice way to get a nice stretch into, again, creating that proprioception of those choices of how do I move my neck? How do I move my head? How do I recruit? And so try that out and see how that one feels. So sometimes just checking in when we are working at the computer or we're driving or whatever it is that we're doing, where we kind of fall into that slouch with the head forward, you can call it like the cell phone neck, and, you know, bringing that position in, that stretch in, and getting a nice stretch all the way up the back of the neck can be really lovely. Also, don't overdo this because, again, referencing back how Erin can be all or nothing, I learned this stretch and then we went on to the beach, which was like a 2.5 hour car ride. And I did that stretch the entire 2.5 hours because that's just the way I am, people. And I had a headache for like 2 days. So little movements matter and little movements count. And when you're making a shift in how you carry your body, you don't have to do it for 2 hours the first time. You can do it for like 2 minutes. So you don't have to be like me with that one. Sitting with in different ways. So we're getting, you know, we're referencing just practical shifts that you can do in your own body. Again, our normal is our normal and we don't feel it very well. It's just what we do. So like I said, how we sit in the car or how we hold our neck or the tension that we carry, it just feels normal until we start questioning it and letting our brain actually communicate with that part of our body. And so noticing how you sit can be very powerful because sitting with a neutral pelvis can really support the back, the pelvic floor, the core, and also allowing your body to shift from one position to another when it gets fatigued can be very empowering as well. So another step that you can take is just daring to be different. You can sit differently. You can stand when everyone else is sitting. You can walk on rocks next to the sidewalk instead of on the actual sidewalk, wearing weird shoes or going barefoot. We live in a sedentary culture, so movement is countercultural, and you will probably look a little weird sometimes if you want to live counterculturally. So I'm not saying that you need to like march into your place of work and like throw your desk out the window and tell your boss that you don't really care anymore about the culture and you're just going to do what you're going to do. But starting to develop a comfort for being mildly uncomfortable and also for making others mildly uncomfortable is a healthy habit that bleeds over into many other empowering areas of our lives. So physical movement facilitates so much more than just physical freedom. So all of this is why I don't use the word exercise to encompass my work. Yes, yes, I do. I teach exercise and I teach tutorials to my clients. I teach exercise classes, but this is why I like to call myself a functional movement coach, because my goal is for each of my clients to land in a place of strength and function in their entire bodies and not just the physical side of things. So my reminder for you today is that your body is beautiful. It's capable. It's strong. finding your boundaries and playing at the edge of this is where you can build more strength. But building more strength and function is possible for everyone. You can move into living a life of strength and function, joy, and abundance. So if you have some specific areas you'd like to incorporate more movement into with your work as a birth worker or just in your everyday life, but you feel a little bit stuck and unsure, remember that I'm here. You can always email me and I'd be happy to add some of your ideas to my YouTube list as well. So if you're wanting to start playing around with some proprioception in your own body, I recommend starting with my 4 shifts to a strong back guide. So it gives you 4 shifts that you can use to support your back and your whole body system. But it's also going to give you the tools to shift from a perspective of just assuming you know where your pelvis is at in space in your body and slowing down and checking in and creating new neural brain connections from your brain to your pelvis. So it's actually kind of nerdy and really fun. So again, just practicing that proprioception in your own body. Sometimes it's nice to have a guide or a few questions or a few tools to start that process. So thank you so much for listening today. And remember to tune in to part 2 next week, where we dive into more of the trauma side of how movement can impact our emotional health and healing. I am so grateful for you and for your work and how you serve this amazing community. If you are enjoying these episodes, I would so appreciate if you would rate, subscribe, and review this podcast. It makes a huge impact on our ability to reach other birth workers and continue our mission to support the supporters. Have a fabulous week, and I will talk to you next week.
The information and discussion provided on this podcast are not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have a medical concern, you should consult with an appropriately licensed physician or healthcare provider.